Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Well, it's Saturday morning, the Giro's about to get underway. This is the first day of the race. Late last night, I managed to upload our preview pod that me and Matt did. If you can call it a preview pod, you can't really. It was just a litany of complaints about sort of twinges and really rather strange afflictions that have already beset us, like my overly blistered heels, courtesy of the Lee Cooper shoes, and Matt's Malpensa terminal-related blunt trauma that has resulted in his left buttock twinge. If you haven't caught up on all that news, I recommend that you go back and listen to yesterday's podcast for all the latest updated details on that kind of pressing concern. At least it's pressing for us. But our listeners are amazing already, even though it's only been out for a few hours. We've had some lovely feedback. Irrelevant on Twitter says, awesome, I've been listening to last year's Giro pod to get in the mood. I'm giggling like a drain. And then he says, Prozac dogs. And I had to sort of like go back and think, what's he talking about? And I remember there was a whole thing about Prozac dogs last year. Sticky D'Oliveira says, lovely stuff. A buttock injury is always a strong enough subject to hold the attention. You did miss the chance to drop in the technical term for the metal bar thingy on the floor, which is apparently a transition strip. A Partridge Thornton says he's very excited for these pods with Matt Stevens at Real Stevens were an absolute joy. Ian Dredge says, brilliant, looking forward to listening to you and Matt Stevens descend into madness as the Giro progresses. Tales of tiled hotel rooms. Yep, that's literally what I've just stepped out of on the outskirts of Turin this morning to head off to the finish line. And what nonsense was on the menu, which reminds me, I have to get some nonsense ready for today's live broadcast on Stage 1. And Lady D. Ladash says, Ned, hope your heels heal up, which is a nice little, what would you call that, a kind of, I don't know what the linguistic term for that is. It's the same word, or sounds the same word, but it has two different meanings. And they're right next to each other in that sentence. Hope your heels heal up soon, Ned. Compound blister plasters are very good, by the way. And hope that at Real Stevens buttock and sciatica pain eases soon too. But I'm particularly indebted to a listener, Ed Parsons, who early this morning messaged me when I woke up this morning, and he said that he'd listened to yesterday's podcast and noted my reference to the Grande Torino plane disaster of 1949 and how today is the 75th anniversary and I'm sure that the race is going to mark it in all sorts of ways. And he pointed out, and this I had not escaped my notice, actually. I'd noticed it yesterday, that, and I vaguely remembered reading about it, that amongst the dead, the 31 who died in that plane crash, there was an Englishman, Leslie Leavesley, who played for Manchester United. I think he was a fullback, and had then gone on to, after his playing career, a managerial career. And ended up actually coaching, I think, the Turin youth team, I think I'm right in saying, and then the Italian national team at the 1948 Olympics. And then he went on to become the first team coach at Torino, and you know, they were on track to win their, I think, their fifth or sixth championship when disaster struck. His son, Bill, was 11 years of age in 1949 when he lost his dad. And Ed Parsons, thank you, Ed, for pointing this out, told me that, and I don't know what the connection is, I'm about to find out, that Bill himself is in Turin today. And he's obviously going to be part of the anniversary memorial ceremonies on the Superga. And he'll be there watching the race come by at around about 2:30 in the afternoon or thereabouts. Maybe 3:00. And would I like to catch up with him? So very quickly, via Ed's mum, Wendy, to whom I'm very grateful, I've managed to make contact. And I'm on my way down into Turin to meet up with Bill. Because, even though this is never strays far, there is a very, very strong cycling connection in Bill's story as well as the extraordinary personal story that he's got to tell. Never Strays Far is proud to be supported by BICMO Cycle Insurance, protecting the world's riders and the places we ride. Head to BICMO.com and use the code NSF24 on their quote page to get 12 months of award-winning BICMO insurance for the price of 11. Terms apply.
Crepuscolo durato tutto il giorno, una malinconia da morire.
Well, I have found a seat in a cafe. I've just drunk an entire double espresso, so I've woken up for the morning, and I'm sitting in glorious sunshine opposite Wendy, who has kindly introduced me to Bill Leavesley, a former resident of Turin itself. Tell us a little bit about your childhood and who your father was.
Well, my father originally he was a footballer. Obviously, he started his career out at Doncaster Rovers. I forget what the order these came in, but he played for Torquay United and one or two other teams. Of course,
he played for Manchester United.
That's right, he did.
But
he,
I love the fact that you mentioned Doncaster Rovers and Torquay United before you mentioned Manchester United.
Yeah, but he wasn't too happy with Manchester, but he went into the war very early. He wasn't dragged in. He was determined to beat Hitler on his own. He ended up as a parachute instructor, and the plane that he was riding in was shot down on two occasions, not the same plane, of course, and still he survived. And unfortunately, he was killed in a plane crash. That's the sad bit about it. But
as I understand it, Bill, after his playing career, he went into coaching, and ended up actually. I think he was offered a job in Marseille, but ended up instead taking a job in Torino, in Turin. You came out to live here when he took the Torino job, didn't you, as well?
Yeah.
You were like 9 years old or something at the time?
Eight, I think.
Yeah. And then, of course, I mean, tragedy struck. Do you have memories of finding out what had happened? Or?
Yeah. It was a wet, cold, miserable day. I was playing in the street, I think, and because we lived in a big apartment with marble floors, wonderful. And I remember my mother calling me in, and she told me that there'd been an accident, and nobody knew anything really. And gradually, the news started to get round, you know. And when it turned out there'd been a plane crash, quite frankly, I didn't believe that my dad could have been killed. Because he'd been in two plane crashes in the RAF, and he'd survived them both, you know. We went to stay with some friends of my mother and dad's, you know, and I wanted to stop in Torino. To me, that would have been really good and marvellous, you know, but she insisted on going back to Rossington. God, that's a hole. Oh, dear.
Well, apologies to anyone listening to this podcast who lives in Rossington, but Bill's just put the entire town away. I'm not going to comment. I'm not going to get dragged into a controversy like that. But it's such an extraordinary story. And thank you for telling us. It must be bizarre, beautiful, but also very, very hard for you to be here on the 75th anniversary of and on the day that the Giro d'Italia is in Turin, which is an extraordinary coincidence, especially because the second half of this story is your relationship with the bicycle. Because when you, in later years, when you came back home to Yorkshire, you discovered the bike, didn't you? And you became a racer.
I didn't have a bike at first, and I used to borrow other people's. And anyway, I finally bought a second-hand bike, a Rutsch Pathfinder. So I put drop handle bars on it and all the rest of it, you know.
You devil, you.
And it still had a Sturmey Archer four-speed gear.
Good, excellent.
Oh, dear. But anyway, I started work at the Plant Works, which is a big locomotive works in Doncaster. Of course, I'd had no schooling, really, because I was a couple of years in Italy and a year in Holland at school. And I went to a school in Doncaster, secondary modern, and my mother managed to get me to a central school, and oh, it goes on. But I, when I was at the Plant Works, working as a steam hammer driver, I met two blokes who were in Cunnish Rivenhoe Cycling Club, and they got talking to me. Do you like cycling? Yeah. Do you want to join the club? Well, I don't know. So they persuaded me, and anyway, I went out the following week with them, you know, and I didn't realise how fit ordinary cyclists were, you know, and it was. It had absolutely slung it down with snow, and there was about a foot of snow, you know. And of course, not being a particularly good cyclist in them days, I kept falling off on the ice, and I ended up, I was absolutely knackered. And anyway, I got me tin of bread and potted meat, I think it was, out, and I sat at the side of the road eating this potted meat, and they came back and found me and took me up to the cafe. But that was my start of cycling, you know.
And you went on to, you raced the Tour of Britain.
Yeah, I did.
More than once or just the once?
No, twice. And I was mechanic once. The first time I rode the tour, I rode for the South of England team, you know. And I wasn't fit, really, and I took a right beating the first stage. But after that, I started to sort of...
Find your legs.
And I think I got a disputed third in a stage and all the rest of it, you know.
Disputed third. Yeah. I think you got the third. clear as day to me. You were on the podium, Bill.
Well, you know.
Were you a contemporary of Tom Simpson?
Well, I did know him quite well. In fact, I have at home his World Championship jersey. Have you heard of the Captain Engel?
No.
No. Well, in those days, the Captain Engel was a cafe just out in Belgium. I'd been before, the year before, and I knew Albert Burick, who was the lad in charge of all cyclists who went there. His father was the only cafe, and it was a handling pardon. In other words, they killed horses and sold for horse meat. And
wasn't expecting that.
Well, yeah. And he said, do you fancy going to the World Championship? So I said, yeah, how would do we go on my scooter? Well, it was 20 stone, Albert. But me and him on this scooter must have looked ridiculous. Anyway, we got on the scooter and we rode there. We watched that. It was good. Yeah. I mean, the motor paced and all the rest of it, you know. And Albert got stung by a wasp because, well, he wouldn't take any notes from me. He was...
Albert is the 20-stone horse the butcher.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay, and he got stung by a bee watching the World Championships. Where's this story going, Bill?
Well, the story is going to me meeting Tommy Simpson again.
Okay.
Because Anyway, he said, blow this, although in much stronger language.
Oh, bother, he said. Yes.
Yeah. We got on the scooter and we headed off to... we went there and Albert says, I'll get us in. Because everybody...
By this time he's recovered from the bee sting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So his, he says, the British team are here, which they were, like, you know. And he says, we'll go in to their hotel, mate, and I'll get us in. So I said, all right. So anyway, we found the hotel, and there was the English team and all the hangers-on. And Tiny Thomas was the manager. And anyway, we walks in, and Albert, he's very expansive, as you imagine, and he said, good morning, I am Albert Burick. And the team looked round at him, who the hell's this? And they said, hello, Bill. Who's your fat mate? I said, it's Albert Burick. So anyway, they welcomed me. Well, yeah, you knew everybody we're racing. And I ended up in the England pits because Tiny Thomas, he said, well, we haven't got an engineer. So he said, are you any good with a spanner? I said, yeah, not bad. So he's right, you can be in the pits. So I represented England in the pits.
Very good.
Anyway, Albert was rather nonplussed, but they said they shoved him in the stand somewhere so it went on.
That's
anyway,
to put him too on, to be honest, yeah.
I
out of the way, he sounds like a liability.
Well, he was.
Yeah.
But I met Tom,
yep.
And I was chatting to him, you know,
yep.
And he says, do you want to buy me kit? I says, well, yeah, why, what's up? He says, well, I've got no money, and my soigneur costs so much and all the rest of it, and I ain't got paid yet. So I said, how much? He says, £2. I says, you're on. So I got his racing jersey. He came fourth in the World Championship. I mean,
he had to sell his kit because he was skint.
Yeah.
To you, yeah. For £2?
Yeah.
And you've still got it?
Still got it.
Quel giorno di pioggia, bambino, lo sai, il cuore mio a pezzi non scorderà mai. Tu viso una ruga che prima non c'era, lo sguardo nel vuoto, quel vuoto che sai. Quel giorno di pioggia ti dissi com'è, la vita ti vive senza un perché.
Bill, just finally, what does today, coming back to today, what are you going to do today? What's on the agenda? Because it is like a very, very special day, isn't it? 4th of May, 2024. It's 75 years since your father's death and the accident. The race is going to come right past the Superga. Where are you going to be when the race comes past?
Do you know, I've no idea.
We're going to be at the restaurant.
You're going to climb up to the Superga, aren't they? Because later on in the day, I understand, after the race, there's going to be a memorial service.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Basilica.
Yeah. I always go there.
There is a ceremony every year, isn't there? But obviously this year it'll be even more significant.
Yeah. But the first time I went, I thought it was about time I came here, because I hadn't been back for, well, since we lived here, really. I looked at where the Superga was, you know, from the bank of the river. And I thought, well, it's no good trying to get a bus or a taxi or anything.
You didn't walk, did you?
So I thought, sod it, I'll walk.
It's quite a walk.
Give myself plenty of time.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I walked and I got in the Basilica. And anyway, the time came when they were going to start... the ceremony, and these two guys come and tried to chuck me out. So I said, listen, I'm Bill Leavesley, my father's was killed in the disaster, and I'm stopping here. And word seemed to filter through, And so I think it was the chairman of the club who came to see me, you see. And then I went home. But I thought, well, next time I'll try and get it a bit, a bit easier. And
now, as I understand it, you are a recognised figure in the community of relatives and survivors, yeah.
So it would appear, mind you, we're getting shorter by the minute.
It's a long time ago. So last night you were a guest of honour at the football match. They drew 0-0, was it? Nil-nil in the
I thought it was an interesting game.
Well, let's not get too much into the details of the game. Yeah. This is, after all, a cycling podcast. And today, yeah, it's going to be a big, big day for you, isn't it, Bill? It's going to be a very big day. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always followed the Giro d'Italia.
Who's going to win?
Well, I've no idea.
You and me, exactly the same.
But, my real interest came in the days of Coppi and Bartoli.
Yeah. And can't see either of them winning this year.
No,
I think it's going to be they're a little bit long in the tooth for it, yeah.
Yeah, not half.
Bill, it's been an absolute pleasure to meet you. I just wish you all the best. I hope you have a fantastic day. I mean, I don't know what sort of day that means, really, whether, you know, because it's a sad day, but also a celebration of the Giro d'Italia as well. So you must have very mixed feelings. It must be a very strange day.
Yes, but I've got used to it now.
Yeah, sure.
And it's okay because I know a lot of the people in the supporters' club.
Yeah.
And I've been there. Well, we've been there as guests of honour.
Yeah.
And it's all very, very pleasant.
Good.
Up there, you know.
Good.
I mean, my father's dead, unfortunately. But, life goes on, doesn't it? And that's it.
Gabetto. Mazzola. Ossola. E tutti i cuori granata che non battono più.
The sun is beating down, summer is rushing in. May is here and it brings with it the first Grand Tour of the year. The Giro d'Italia is just minutes away from rolling out of the start line and into its unique three-week story, a patchwork of the unexpected, a race like no other in a country built for bike racing. Benvenuti a tutti.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Pogacar looks around Narváez. Schachmann trying to go long. Schachmann alongside Narváez. Now the sprint opened up with a couple of hundred metres to go. Pogacar alongside Narváez. Narváez on terms with Pogacar and ahead of Pogacar. Pogacar responding then. Who's going to get it on the line? It's Jonathan Narváez from Ecuador who outsprints Tadej Pogacar and takes the Maglia Rosa in fantastic fashion.
Well, sort of.
I don't know where to begin. Honestly, last quarter of an hour, not of the race. So we can get onto the race. We can talk a bit about the race, can't we?
Yeah, we should probably at some point insert that into this cycling kind of themed podcast. But there's been a lot of other shenanigans.
Well, all the drama of the race has been totally supplanted by the drama of the last 10 minutes. You just nearly killed us on the motorway. It's fine, by the way, because I'm doing this recording. Everything's settled down,
yes,
so don't worry about our.
No.
We're perfectly safe. But there was a little moment just now. You're not a fan of. We've got a modern hire car, and it's got that kind of like you're not allowed to cross the line sort of automatic.
I'm sure you can take it off. It's one of those lane controlling things. So if I change lanes and I indicate, as I'm doing now, that's fine. But if I try and move lanes without indicating, there's like this tactile feedback which throws you, it kind of steers for you, and it's not very nice. And it keeps on taking me by surprise. and it's upsetting and annoying me a little bit. But even worse, even before that, just moments before that, we had to stop to do some. You did have to do a voiceover.
A little bit of voiceover. Yeah, it was quite. I won't go into what it was or how I do it. It's quite the. Oh, look at that record hotel. It's Charlie Quarterman's hotel.
We
from
keep passing by
we
that,
keep
don't
passing. That's where we stayed the night before Gran Piemonte. 2023, which is his last ever race, and I had a coffee with him there at the record hotel.
I remember getting up slightly early in the morning and going and have a nap with him. He's a good lad, isn't he?
Yeah.
But not at this Giro.
Yeah.
But so he pulled in.
Yeah. In the car. So you went for a wee.
Yep.
And funnily enough, weirdly, we ended up in the Egyptian themed shopping centre where I'd failed to buy any shoes the other day that I think we spoke about in the pod.
Two mentions for that particular giant shopping centre. I popped in there for a quick wee, washed my hands. When I squirted the soap to wash my hands, it's one of those soap dispensers that squirts out with at such ridiculous velocity, it went up my sleeve. So I had to spend like a good minute or two washing off the soap sads, which then turned into bubbles on my sleeve. Anyway, came back, got to the car thinking Ned would still be doing the voiceover, and he'd done it. So then you had to upload it to WeTransfer, send it to Andrea, our producer. Then we got in the car, drove out of the shopping centre car park, and a woman in front of me was reversing towards me because she'd gone the wrong way, causing me to slam on the anchors.
Yeah, not a full emergency stop, not like a driving test sort of situation, but nonetheless, firm stop. But enough to kind of like sprain a buttock or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And it, I wouldn't say it was violent, but it's firm, yeah. And then, lo and behold... They've been perched on the roof all along and slid down the windscreen into
my laptop.
Laptop.
Yeah, it just slid down the windscreen and thankfully it got snagged and stopped by the windscreen wipers.
Yeah.
Otherwise it would have just rolled over down the bonnet and onto the and it would have broken into a million pieces.
Well, you astutely observed, if it hadn't been for the woman reversing, I'd have just pulled onto the motor, onto the roundabout, pulled onto the motorway at about 50 mile an hour, it would have just would have taken off like a inept aeroplane, wouldn't it? And just been destroyed. It's behind us though, isn't it?
It's behind us. It's literally behind us in the back seat.
As is Turin.
Yeah. Good race.
Good. It was a good race. Great bit of bike racing.
We really enjoyed seeing Lilian Calmejean, back to really sparkling form, and we enjoyed his irritation with Filippo Fiorelli. That was really great fun.
It was a great little subplot, and he could really sense his anger swerving all over the road because he couldn't get rid of him, then hit him over the top of the climb. Not physically, he didn't punch him, just attacked.
No, because that's against the rules.
That is against the rules. It's a non-contact sport. And then joined up with Gebre Jabir. And at that point, we think, well, are they going to stay away? And if they do, it'll probably Gebre Jabir that takes the jersey. And ultimately, Gebre Jabir faded a little bit, and Calmejean just held on. And I had said in the commentary, and I just cheered him on. And it was properly exciting, and then the race just kicked off big time behind, didn't it?
Yeah, groups going all over the place. Nicola Conchi kind of clipped off the front of this kind of, well, the thing was, Pogacar was really quite isolated. He only had Rafa Majka with him, so everyone went, well, hang on, we can hit him here. So groups went up the road, little groups of six, three, four got together, group of seven. Conchi attacks off that. Looks like as he hits that San Vito climb with 20 seconds, it looks like that might be the winning move briefly, but then Pogacar lights it up behind, doesn't he? He goes, right, game time.
I mean, I'm going to say he literally lit it up. He didn't set fire to the race, but I'm going to use that phrase, he lit it up and shut the gap so quickly that the transponders couldn't react quick enough. And then he got onto the back of Conchi, but with Jonathan Narvaez on his wheel,
never more than like a foot or two at most off. It's extraordinary, his resilience, because everyone else was Alaphilippe stayed on the wheels for a surprisingly and quite heartening, quite a positive and encouraging length of time. But this is Tadej Pogacar attacking in a Grand Tour, attacking to try and win stage one. He's on a kind of one-man crusade to make history, and he wanted to make history today. His debut at the Giro d'Italia, win the first stage, take the Maglia Rosa. This was not a whatever attack from Pogacar. This is a full... So for Narváez to have held his wheel with that degree of comfort, relative comfort, although he did say afterwards, half an hour later, he was still feeling it, was extremely impressive. Probably the best bit of riding in Narváez's very solid career that he's had to date, but that was probably the best thing he's ever done on a bike.
Yeah, and it was, I think we saw the replay about 50 times, it takes quite a long time, just a bit of behind the scenes information, it takes quite a lot of time before we actually get to the podium, so there's a good 40 minutes of filler. But actually, watching that sprint again, just underscored, well, firstly, what you just described it, his strength, but also how cool, the cool head he had on his shoulders. At no point did he give him a turn. You know, and Tadej wasn't panicking on the descent, but really pushing it on the descent to try and kind of upseat or try and force Narváez into some sort of error. Pulled him back on the flat, didn't give him a turn. Shackman the same. Got to say, good ride. Good to see Max Shackman back towards, back at the sharp end as well after a couple of quiet years. And it was Shackman, you observed this late, didn't you? That Shackman opened up the sprint from the back just at the point where Pogacar was looking under his arm, then opened his sprint up early. So Pogacar got tricked into it,
not because of anything Narváez did, but because of Shachman suddenly appearing on the scene and going very, very long. And that kind of like flicked Pogacar into making the mistake that Narváez said he probably made. This is the defining mistake, and he just went slightly too long because he's so fast, Pogacar. And that allowed, that played into the hands of Narváez, who came off his wheel and won the sprint.
That was great. You might look at that and say, well, is it worth it for the amount of how many seconds he took? But they clearly would. I mean, from the way they rode and the fact that UAE rode and the fact that they only had Rafa Majka there at the end suggests that that was the plan. But he was isolated and there were the groups going. And I did say that on that flat section before the run, that's where he'll be exposed, and he was.
Yeah.
And we'll see how this plays out. But when the dust settles, you look at the GC, he's already taken
14 seconds on Thomas. Yeah. Bardet's kind of out of it, almost.
Yeah, Aaronsman out of it. Two minutes.
Who else? There's another Plapp who we weren't sure about anyway, but he seems to have lost time today. So, I mean, it's kind of... It's an interesting one, because you can read it one of a number of different ways.
I think we're going to see some riders that we wouldn't... It always happens at a Grand Tour. There's always one or two riders that think, oh, top 10 in the Giro or top 10 in the Tour. It's going to happen here. That it's going to be three or four riders... outsiders are going to end up inside the top 10. And we know just from history, especially from the Giro d'Italia, how difficult this race can be and how much luck does play an enormous part. But already to see two such respected riders, Aaronsman sixth last year, drop out, and also Bardet surprisingly go, and they were two of the tipped riders, not to win the race but to maybe podium, or maybe top five or six, are gone. So it makes it, I'm not going to say it's open, but it makes it open for the riders looking for the podium. But I still think if the way that quite quickly UAE ran out of resource, I think that could be, there'll be a lot of discussion about that. I think that's an interesting one. But they've didn't win the stage, but he's still in a good position, and we've got our first mountain top finish. But thrillingly entertaining, great course, well raced, lots to talk about. There was no filler at all today, was there? It was brilliant.
And we both concluded on our umpteenth visit to Turin that we might, we could both see ourselves kind of retiring to Turin, living out our lives in Turin. It would be that kind of place, wouldn't it? Just as we're leaving Turin now, a gentleman crossed the road. We stopped for him at a zebra crossing, and he crossed the road in front of us. And he, for all the world, he looked like a kind of left-leaning dissident poet philosopher
or artist.
Yeah, with a sideline in oil painting, probably.
Exactly. It probably made a few art house films in this time, or a couple of documentaries as well.
And I thought, that's the kind of guy I could see myself hanging out with, as the years go by.
And we're thinking of a future publication, whether a digital one or an analog one.
I think it'd be analog.
We named it the Torino.
La Vita Torinese con Ned Bolting.
That's it. And we even agreed on a type font, didn't we? In a typeface.
Well, actually, thinking about it now, I think what we might... So me and this poet will get together, collaborate on this. And I think I might just type it out on an old Olivetti, actually. And distribute it using those... Do you remember those Gestetner drum printer things from back in the day?
Yeah, I do.
So you turn it around and each copy gets successively more and more fuzzy and indistinct.
We had them at school, but before photocopiers, we had those at school.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be the kind of vibe that I'm going. So it's very much not digital, Matt. And it's not going to make me money, but
it's not about money, isn't it? You'd be. And we also thought, although, that you might actually not bother learning any Italian, but look ridiculously Italian. And for the Italians, that's enough. possibly. I'm sorry. I'm stuck behind a lorry now, and I can't quite see where I'm going. So I'm just going to back off slightly.
Okay, it's a biglietto.
It's a biglietto.
Yeah, so you're going to. Yeah. I'm just going to commentate on this because Matt's chosen this very. He's got lots of different options now.
That's one of those ones. That was a good choice.
He's gone behind. So he's left the wheel of a DB Schenker articulated lorry, and he's picked quite controversially a white van. It's a bit battered looking, so the driver could be a little bit roguish. But you'd have thought white van. He's kind of I'm making assumptions here. It might be a female driver. Let's say they are probably a professional driver, but. You picked a good. That wasn't much faffing around there.
So let's just see if I can continue to roll.
I've pulled the ticket out. At no point did we stop.
No, at no point did we stop.
Barry's up and we're off and running again. That is Grand Tour experience.
It is GTE, mate. It's GTE in live. And that just unfurled in front of the pod viewers' ears. Got the ticket. Going to wind up the window. Back up to speed. Whacker in fifth. And we're away again.
You're just good at it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.